I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. Steve, we can't take a day off anymore without being noticed. I guess we have moved to that level where we actually have an audience.
Oh, wow.
And people actually noticed that there was no podcast last week.
Hey, that's a good thing. A good thing that they noticed. Not a good thing that there wasn't one. But yeah, that's what happens when, you know, it's a lesson learned. Like, I reached out to you. We typically tape on a Thursday. And I don't know, I just wasn't feeling up to it. So I reached out to you and like, hey, let's, you know, can we do it? And you're like, yeah, just move it. And then your weekend went sideways. And next thing you know, right, that we couldn't, you know, there wasn't anything we can do. We didn't have time to get it done. So
could have. It would have been half-assed and it wouldn't have been very good. I was exhausted.
Well, my point is I typically take pride in saying that I don't take days off from my program.
Yep.
Like my regular meetings, like I typically don't stay home from my meetings if I'm tired. And it was a lesson learned to me, like don't take nights off from here unless I have to, right? If I have to, I have to, but not just because I don't feel like doing it, because you just never know, right? You get caught and then all of a sudden you get caught and now you're busy on the weekend. So something to be learned. That's why I reached out to you and like, hey, I'm away this weekend, so yeah, let's make sure we record tonight,
you know? Yeah, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, so
even though I'm not at my best for a different reason, had a colonoscopy today, so still groggy. But last weekend was a trip to Boston. My son had a volleyball tournament, so we're there 3 days. And we got back. I was gassed. It was like I had been to Europe for a week.
Yeah.
It was like I wasn't out of the time zone, but I felt jet lagged. I was gassed on, didn't go to my meeting on Monday because I was gassed.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you're not used to having that level of activity. I mean, you're busy and all, but not that level where you're gone, you're not sleeping in your own bed, all those things, right? So
yep.
Not eating at home, you know, just your whole program, your whole schedule is messed up. And I just know, listen, I'm always happy as much as I'm going on retreat, and as much as I'll enjoy that, I'm always happy to get back home to my own bed. Even when I'm on vacation, I'm always happy to get back home to my own bed. I just feel better there. I sleep better there, all those things. So, but we're back.
We're going to have to, let's do that as a topic sometime. Retreat, sober retreats, what they are.
Sure, that's a great.
I've been to one in my whole life.
Oh, you should do more.
Probably should.
Today, I'm going to one, and I haven't done a winter one in a long time, and I've decided that I need to do more. Like, I've always done one for a while, and I've thrown a couple in, but now I'm going to try to do two or three a year, every year. They're just good. It's just nice to get away and forget about it. You know, you get away from a lot of stuff, so. And you can do a little bit of focus. There's 38 guys going on this retreat, man. It's a nice retreat, so it'll be a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff.
It was a financial hardship when I went to the first time back in 2014, where I think it was close to $200, maybe $160, but it was in that range.
Right.
This is not a financial hardship for me anymore.
Right.
It's something I can do, and the kids are older, where if I'm away for a weekend, it would be okay.
Right.
But I had made so many excuses that I got out of the habit.
Yep.
So I still get the mailings.
It's easy.
Yep.
Lots of good ones out there.
Mm-hmm. So that goes into our topic, and the topic is fear. And one of the reasons I didn't go on these retreats was fear.
Yeah.
Fear of letting down my family, financial. Not having the money for it. My wife would be angry at me.
Right.
These are all fear things. So I'm sure we've done a fear show before.
Yeah, of course.
But I could do a fear show every week and talk about my fears.
It's one of the big things. I don't think it's unique to alcoholics or addicts, because I think there's a lot of people who have that. But I think it's more prevalent to our addiction, because I know for me, right? For me, I'll talk to me, is that it kept me drinking for a long time. Like this the whole thing, like you said, this fear of everything, fear of economic insecurity, fear of letting people down, fear of my marriage failing, like fear of everything. It just, and then, you know, I would be so tied in knots over all this fear that I needed to do something to get rid of it. And my outlet was to drink. You know, we always talk about drinking wasn't the problem, it was the solution.
Absolutely.
So, you know, when I had all that fear, my solution was to drink and I'd forget about my fear. So it's something that still creeps up with me, not as much as it used to. But it's still something I got to pay attention to. You know, I mean, I have to pay attention to it because I'll just tell you what, but for me, my fear turns to anger is what happens. And we can talk about that and dig into that a little bit.
Yes.
That's what happens to me. And
yeah, me too.
And that's not fun, right? It's not fun because, you know, typically I'll end up taking that out on the people that I care about most.
That happened to me first day we went. So we had a longer weekend. Usually, let me think. Now, this was the same amount of time, I think, than we did in Pennsylvania, but it was more packed days, even though it was a closer drive. We drove to Boston. So from where I live, maybe a 2-hour drive up there, but we had everybody. Usually I take Owen by myself. The whole family went. So we had a much bigger hotel.
All right.
We had a suite. We had to do a lot of walking in Boston. My usual steps on my Apple Watch are like 8,000. I was doing like 18,000-20,000 right. steps.
Yeah.
It was crazy the amount of physical activity. And we were not moving the way I like to move. You know, I have a whole way of doing these trips. And now I'm adding in more people and they don't do it the way I want them to do it. Yeah. And you know, I have this one little bag. And I turn around and look, I could send you the photos. My wife had an enormous bag. My two daughters had two enormous bags. And then they start packing food.
Fucking bullshit!
And that upset me. And we got on the road late. And we weren't doing it the way I wanted. And we were trying to find somewhere to eat that first night. And I'm the decisive one of the group. We walked by Legal Seafood. I didn't really want to do a chain, but I'm like, you know what? I heard a lot of these places can't get reservations. So we're walking by, and even though it said on the website no reservations, I looked in. There were tons of tables. We walked in. Can you seat us? Yes. So we went in. I went down the street to pick up my son, and he's like, I don't want to go there. I'm sweaty. I have my bags. I have my pillow. And I just looked at him and looked him straight in the eyes.
I want to fight you.
So I get into a fight with him and I'm like, that's it. That's it. No more volleyball. This is right. Your last season.
Right. Yeah.
And I immediately felt like total crap.
Yeah.
Immediately. And I think it was fear-based because I was out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And a lot of times if we go on trips, I get anxious and squirrely and usually blow up at someone because I think it is, I'm out of my comfort zone and I'm uncomfortable and nervous. And it ends up going into that.
Yeah, there's so many layers to things like that. For me, like, there's a lot of fear. And I remember now talking to my wife, right? My wife and I, second marriage, we don't have kids together, but we both had kids. And we talked about how, like, I was petrified when I was out with my kids, like in parking lots and stuff, or anything, like anything where my kids could like fall off the edge or something. And I watch parents even today, and I'm watching how they just let their kids walk around, and I just can't believe some of it. But I was petrified of it. And that would always turn to anger. Like I would end up screaming at my kids because I was so afraid that something was going to happen, right? So they would like do something, just kid stuff, but I'd be screaming at them. And the same thing, it's funny how you said that when you got in the fight with your son, you're like, no more volleyball. I was in therapy where we were doing some family therapy, my first marriage. And I remember talking. I don't know how we came across the conversation, but there was something that my son did, and we talked about like the type of punishment that I would give him. And the therapist looked at me. She says, "Don't you think you're overreacting on that punishment for that?" Like, I don't know. Am I? Like, I don't think I am. But that was the point. Like, that was who I was, right? I would overreact. Same thing. Like, no more. We're done.
Yep.
And yeah, it's really, really stressful. Plus, you know, the underlying thing is like, I know for me and for you a little bit, I like to be in control. And when things aren't going the way I like them to go, you know, it's gonna irritate me a little bit more. Yeah, and the fear, especially when you're in a place that's new, you're not exactly sure where you're going, what time. Like, oh God, there's just so much doing. And you know, some people love to travel. I don't mind travel, but it's not like a big desire of mine. I just don't have this thing to run around, do a lot of this kind of stuff. And a lot of it is I'm just not comfortable. Same thing. It's like when I get traveling, right? When I get moving, I get a little bit nervous about, you know, missing stuff, just like you, like missing yep. stuff and missing flights and missing connections and stuff like that, that I'm not as comfortable. I'm out of my comfort zone. And actually, I do much better when I fly alone. Like I've flown for business and I've gone international and stuff. Not a problem. Like that I can do because I'm in control. I know exactly. I know how to handle myself. But man, if I'm dragging people with me, oh God, it's really, really tough. So it's always been there for me. I mean, I know we've talked about it. I don't know if we've done a show on fear, but I know we've talked about fear a lot because it was such a big part of my upbringing. And it was such a big part of my discovery when I went through the steps and did a fourth and fifth step.
There are a lot of reasons for fear. I've talked about this with Mark on Recovered, and we both have the same thing, that money is probably our number one thing that drives fear.
Yeah.
Like we can really relate over that. I can reel it back a little bit to when I was drinking. Here was a fear that I had of stopping drinking that stopped me from drinking. Is I had a fear that I would not be able to socialize. I wasn't married at the time, early on, but find a girlfriend, find new friends, meet people. Because the idea of going to a bar and not drinking was not something I could do. I'm an introvert. I can be shy. And I think a lot of that is less shyness and more feeling that people will reject me.
Right.
So I have that inhibition, and if I drink, I can get through it. And if I didn't have that crutch, how am I going to do that? So no, I can't stop drinking. That's a fear right there.
Right. Absolutely. And it's interesting because one of the things where I think a lot of fear left me, I mean, we're at different stages. Like my kids are grown, my wife's kids are grown. You know, they're all set. We've helped them out. All of our kids are professionals, and their life is their life now, right? The youngest is just turned 30, so they're all professionals. They all have their own life, and now they all get to make all those decisions, grown-up decisions that we made. So some of that financial fear is gone, right? I was able to make a little bit of money. I'm not wealthy by any means, but I was able to make some money and get us comfortable, and I'm still working right now. I'm able to make a little money. So financial fear is not as big for me. And that has taken some pressure off because that was always a huge thing for me because especially through my alcoholic days, I was underemployed or unemployed for a long time, like a period of like 5 years. Some of that I was going back to school when I was married. And then even when I had my first son, like I was very much underemployed, was not doing anything capable, but I was also very severely in my alcoholic addiction at that point. And so by the time I got started on trying to make a life and trying to contribute to a family, yeah, I was in my mid-30s, you know? Even probably later, late 30s, probably by that time, not mid 30s, I guess is when that happened. And then 6 years later, I got a divorce, which all of a sudden set me back again financially. So that financial fear was like incredible. And yeah, I used to say it drove me to like fear kept me from doing things. And it also made me work harder at my job, right? So I think it actually propelled me to really work hard and make some money, because I was in sales and stuff like that. I've talked about it before. We've talked about the imposter syndrome that we both have.
Yes.
I thought forever I would be fired. I thought forever I would be the next one fired from my company, you know? And I ended up being one of the last people. They literally closed the company down. I was one of the last people out the door. I literally was maybe the last one or two people out of the building I worked in for my company. So I made it through all kinds of mergers and this and that and selling of the companies and stuff. But I had so much fear for so long that you know, I was never going to make that.
I have had that imposter syndrome at work. I have to tell you, I think I've overcome it a bit lately. In my new role, I'm not feeling that. Okay. Part of it, I think, is I'm going into this new role with an attitude of, because it is a step removed from the front line, you could look at it as not essential. It's essential what we do in terms of we can bring a lot of value. I think I'm more of a trainer slash consultant person. I'm teaching people how to effectively coach so they can get better results. And there's a whole fight in that. But I look at something like that and I'm like, you know what? I'm willing to take a risk that this could be a position they could go and cut and say, well, we don't really need this, because if I do get cut, it's worth the risk because I'm developing new skills. I'm developing a skill away from what I was doing before, now into something that I'm doing new things. So it opens up other job potential in the future. So I look at that and I'm like, okay, if people don't like what we do, and we're dealing with that at work, that some muckety muck has decided we don't add value. He's never been in one of our trainings. The way he was describing it, he doesn't understand what we do, but he's clear we don't add value. And we have a very good vice president who was very upset about it because he believes in what we do. And his boss went to him and said, you got to settle down. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So there are some things we're doing differently to address that, if just superficially, and continuing doing what we're doing. But on the one hand, it's really great that we have leadership who totally believes in what we do. And I'm getting new skills that I wouldn't have the chance to do that. So I'm willing to take a risk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, those skills will always come in handy no matter what, right? No matter what, they're going to come in handy either within this job and within this, you know, company or within another company. You're going to take those skills wherever you go. And that's always a good thing. You know, it's funny that you talked about no value. Like one of the things I'll never forget, it was like, we worked for a small company and then we merged. There was this merger of like three companies. And my boss, my immediate boss in the facility that I was in, we ended up with a new boss from one of the new companies who was out of Minnesota. And you know, every time you get a new boss, it's sort of a pain in the ass.
Yep.
And he came in once time to see with us, and he calls this meeting to us, and he comes into this meeting and he has this manila folder in his hand and he slams it on the table. And he goes, goddamn monkeys can do what you guys do, you know? And I just remember, like, that was just one of the times my boss and I walked out of there. And, you know, it was after he was gone in no time. Like, he was gone in like within 6 months. And it just gave me a little bit thing, you know, a little bit like, some bosses just don't know what's going on, right? They just don't get it, you know? And it's, you know, I've always said it. I've always, my favorite line, I've had a lot of bosses in my day. My favorite line when I was working, when I got a new boss, and I always would tell him, hey, how you doing? I'm Steve. And I always used to tell him in a joking fashion, but I said, I'll do my best, but it's always difficult to train a new boss. That's what I tell them, right? And it's because it is, you know, these guys would come in, they think they know everything, and they don't know a lot. Even if they have experience, they don't know a lot about what's happening sometimes within the unit. So
this is how I'm different as a leader. And maybe this is because if I heard something like that early in my career, I'd think, shit, he knows I'm a fraud. Right. Now, if you said that to me, I would say, well, pull in a chair. Tell me what I need to know. That would tell me that this is somebody who knows some stuff. I want to stay close to this guy.
Right.
And I would say, you're right. I do need to be trained by new people. You willing to do some training?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot I'm sure I don't know. And I'm sure there's a lot of things I don't know. that I don't know that I don't know.
Right.
And I'm much better about that now. Yeah. I think there, I look at that now and I used to be terrified of those bosses who are throwing things on the table. And now I realize when people behave that way, there's probably something going on with them that is really fear-based. I bet this guy at work who is pounding his fist that you don't add value is under pressure because maybe there are results that he's not getting.
Right.
And he's deflecting. That was the first thing I said in the meeting. I go, somebody's deflecting here.
Yeah. You know, that's the perfect thing because I have that insight many times, not all the times, today myself, is to be able to look at that and think, I wonder what that person's going through, right? And if that person is reacting, or maybe I'd be reacting the same way that person's reacting if I was in that person's shoes. And I'm able to do that today myself and say, look at that and go, I get it today, you know. I don't know if I shared this last time, but you know, I work for a very small company out of, you know, Canada, and I never talk to the owner, who's sort of my boss, who is my boss, and basically just do my thing, and I get paid and all that kind of stuff. And a while back, he reached out to me and said, "Hey, Steve, do you have a few minutes?" And I always think like, right? I always think like, oh, this is where he's going to fire me, right? This is where he's going to finally say, "Steve, you're not doing enough. You're not adding enough value to the company, blah, blah, blah." And so anyway, he goes, "Hey, listen, we need to jumpstart the company. You know, I've been busy. I've been doing other stuff, blah, blah, blah." Anyway, we get on these calls and I find out that the only two accounts that have been really regularly providing stuff were my two accounts, right? And it's like, it's just the total opposite. Like, I was the only one regularly producing. There was other accounts coming in once in a while.
This is a trend with you. You've told me about your sales skills because you've told me a little bit about the things you've done in your job. And the trend is you tend to be one of the higher producers. Like, you've talked about, like, not getting a commission this month because they changed everything up.
Right.
And yet you're like, I can't meet it. And I'm the one who delivers the most. It's like, okay, you're going backwards here.
Right. But it's funny because, well, part of it is like, there's no communication between me and my, right? And that's the biggest thing. Like, there's no communication. And he's got other, and I don't want to drag it down, but anyway, that is me. That's still part of that thing that I still suffer with because I think, I'm just not doing it. And I don't work that hard. I mean, part of it is I know I don't work that hard and I don't want to work that hard. I mean, I just want to working hard enough to make a little bit of money. I'm sort of cruising into retirement. Next year, I'll be able to collect full Social Security, that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to cruise into that a little bit. And then I'll figure out what I want to do after that. So I don't want to work that hard. I don't want to really work. I mean, I worked really hard for lots of years. You know, I gave up a lot of stuff. Like, I didn't do things like take my kids to volleyball. Well, my daughter, I took a little bit. She didn't travel as far as you're traveling. But my son was a Boy Scout at a time where I was working really hard, and I did not do it. It's one of my regrets, right, is I did not do a lot of the Boy Scout stuff with him. And if I had to do my life over, I would have made sure I would have done a lot more. I would have been part of that whole experience, and I wasn't. And like I said, a lot of that happened right after my divorce. I was very poor, and I needed to make money the best I can. I needed to work really hard. So I made some choices that, you know, I sort of regret some of them today, but you know, when time came for my son to go to college, I was able to help him, you know, because I worked hard during those years. So
I would challenge that because I think at times I'm not working as hard as I did in my old role. I think you're probably more efficient than you think.
Yeah. No, I do. And I not only that, but I'm in sales, and actually I'm not in sales anymore. I'm in purchasing right now. And I built up a credibility of 30 years in this business, right? That people can trust me. They can count on me. Perfect example of that. We were on a call and I had one of my customers call me up and said, "Hey, I forgot to tell you, I got this equipment for you." And we laughed on my call with my company that it was probably something that they sold to somebody else and they weren't able to pick it up at the end of the month. But they knew if they came to me that I could pick it up and I could pay for it. I could pick it up. Like, so I built up some credibility in that business where I don't have to work that hard, right? Because I've done that. But I want to get back to the fear. I want to get back to a little bit where people like, we've talked about fear, but some of the things that really gripped me, and one of the things that we've talked about, I've mentioned it here before, is I grew up in an alcoholic family. My mom was an alcoholic, and one of the things, it took me a long time to figure out, but one of the things I struggled with was my relationship with the most significant female in my life. So if that was my girlfriend, you know, like a real steady girlfriend that I had, or my wife or whatever, I struggled big time with those relationships. And I realized after a lot of work and therapy that that struggle was fear-based, right? That struggle was the fact that because I grew up at the most important parts of my life, like my mom wasn't around, she was busy and she was trying to do the best she can with six kids and all, plus she was an alcoholic. I just felt always like that relationship was going to fall apart. Like I was going to be abandoned. That's what I finally figured out. Like I always felt like, okay, this girlfriend's going to dump me, or my wife's going to, you know, find some other guy that she likes better. And I was always that fear, and that's where the anger came out. Like I've made amends to, you know, every significant female I had in my life, and just said, listen, I was a total jerk. And I remember doing that with my first real girlfriend who I thought I would marry. And I remember doing my amends with her, and she was like, oh, you weren't that. I'm like, trust me, you know, trust me. Like, I was a crazy man. I was a crazy man. And I could remember nights where I was a crazy man. So, and again, that's what I said. So that fear would turn into anger, and I would, you know, I'd get pissed off, and I'd get angry. And, oh, God, it was a horrible, horrible thing. And that's the beauty of our program, right? And again, not everybody who listens to this may not be part of the 12-step program, the AA program that we are. But in our program, we have a chance to uncover that. We do the steps, we take an inventory, and we have a chance to identify the fact that these things bother us, and then hopefully do some work on them. And I know that when I went through it and I uncovered all that stuff, it allowed me to sort of isolate it and work on it. Not change it right away, but change it over time. And like I said, a lot less fear-based. You know, some of that financial fear is because I just don't have it anymore. But some of that other stuff, even with my relationship stuff, I'm just more comfortable with it now before. And part of that is, like, I know, right? I know no matter what happens, like we talk about it all the time, that I'm going to be okay. Like, regardless of what life throws at me, I'm going to be okay.
I still have those fears that I'm going to lose the house. I have those dreams, those nightmares of going back to those places. And every year that goes by, we get closer and closer and closer to having paid off the mortgage.
Right.
So eventually, if we just keep plugging along, I'm not in the perfect place. I feel like we make way too much money to have the financial troubles we have. Having said that, I've got a 15-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
Right.
And they are money vacuums.
They are.
And the inflation issue that has hit our family the most has been the groceries.
Yeah, everybody.
Groceries are, that's the one thing where we feel it. It sucks.
Yeah. That, you know, not to get down that rabbit hole, but, you know, these companies are making record profits. Like, and here's the only thing I'll say about this.
I used to be one of these guys who I'm like, no. Companies are not going to do this type of thing. It's only going to hurt them in the end.
No.
And I went from that big capitalism guy to seeing it with life experience. There are a lot of companies that will try and screw you if you allow it.
Here's the one thing you can go look at. Go look at bags of potato chips nowadays, right?
Yep.
Right? Go look at bags of potato. They want like $6 or $8 you could have gotten for $3.50 or whatever. Like, they have a sale, and I'm not talking about the big family ones. There's sales on like the regular size, $2 for $8, $4 a piece, right? That used to be like $1.99. Like, it used to be whatever, maybe $2.99. It's like these things, there's no rhyme or reason why something like potato chips should have gone up that much. What happened was, right, during the pandemic, they knew they can get away with it. They went up for a good reason during the pandemic. Everything became more expensive, right, all the stuff. And then they went, hey, we're just going to leave it here, right? Let's leave it here. And there is some
money,
cost.
They will.
Right. There's some costs, right? There's inflation that's hitting. But anyway, it's hit everybody hard. And that's, I can't even understand, like, a family of five, like you guys, with a 15-year-old son who's active and just sucking up calories.
He eats at like 2 in the morning.
Of course.
He constantly is telling us, I had to get up. I was hungry. Right. I had to eat another meal.
That's what they do at 15, you know? So it's really, really hard. It takes work. If you're somebody out there, if you're listening to this and you can identify with some of this fear base that we're talking about, it takes work to overcome it. And it takes diligence because it's one of those things that will creep up, right? And next thing you know, like if, you know, it'll creep up on you and it'll creep up on you. And like I said, today I'm a lot better, but it's still there. I mean, I still have a little bit of it. You know, probably more outside of things like my kids or my grandkids more than anything else. But I can still get lost in it. I can still go down a rabbit hole thinking that my life is shit. You know, that's what I could think. Like, my life is shit. You know, I don't know, every day I look outside, I got a in-ground pool and I got all this stuff, but I can still look out that window and go, my life is shit. You know, my mortgage is almost paid off, right? I mean, my mortgage is closed. If I wanted to pay off my mortgage right now, I probably could, not even probably, I could pay it off. But
you've got a living room I would kill for. Our living room is cramped, and you have that great room in there.
But
that is like, that's the nicest room I've seen in anyone's house.
It's a beautiful room. That's what I mean. It's easy once you live here to forget about some of those things. And it's easy to get the poor meals. And it's one of the reasons why, again, we'll have to talk about retreats. It's one of the reasons why I'm excited to go on this retreat. Because at this point, I'm feeling like, you know something? I'm feeling like I'm in a fight with life, and life is winning right now, right? And I do, and I feel some of that. There's some challenges I have going on. I'm just not – I don't feel like my life is – I feel like at this point in my life, I should be feeling great. I should be excelling. I have lots of opportunities. I have lots of time on my hands. There's lots of things I could be doing, and I'm just not – I'm not getting there. I'm not getting that feeling. I'm not getting things done. So I'm hopeful that this retreat – with some of the guys I really know. There's some guys on this retreat that I really like. Hopefully I'll have some time to sit down with them, talk to them, and get a little straightened out with that.
You just have to make the time.
Yeah.
So this is all you'll get out what you put in. A retreat is if you want to get out of your comfort zone and do a lot of stuff with a lot of people, you'll get a lot out of it.
Absolutely. And in the way this one's structured, there's definitely time that you could – yeah, there's lots of time where you can sneak off or just walk around with people. It's a beautiful facility. It's outside. It's a camper. It's around the lake. We're in cabins and stuff. So there's lots of opportunity. And you're right. I'll get out of it what I put into it for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't even touch the surface with this.
No, me neither.
But I'd love to hear what you have. And we get emails now. We get emails of people reaching out, even people like McHugh, who last week checked in, literally said, is everything okay with you? Is everything okay? I was looking for the podcast that wasn't there. So it wasn't even like people who are looking to be entertained. It's like, hey, you never miss.
Right.
I want to make sure nothing's wrong. Nope, nothing was wrong. I think this is like the third week we missed since November 2020. So a good record. We'll get some stuff. I usually can build up a reservoir of shows when we have guests. And there are some guests that I want to, I've been tired. The whole guest thing of booking that is not the funnest. It's time consuming.
Yeah.
There are some people I'd love to have on. I think that would add a lot of value.
I got some ideas that I got somebody I want to have on too. So we should probably do that.
The guy you told me about, I would love to meet as well. And it slipped my mind.
Yeah, no, just like you said, do it and bank it. And then we have these other ones that we can use.
In case of emergency.
Yeah. All right, Matthew.
All right. Well, everybody, we're back. We'll be back every week. And if we miss a week, it's okay. Everything's going to be okay. We're here doing this. We're in for the long term. We get a lot out of this. We feel better. I hope you are the same. And next week, we'll see you. Bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.